This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and today's guest is Jonathan Ng. Jonathan is a physical therapist, but took a very non-traditional path to becoming a PT. He has worked out an amazing opportunity working with Adidas in Portland, Oregon. He is an innovator and an entrepreneur. He co-founded Matusi with Mark Alexander, who is an ex-Intel engineer. You will hear him describe the wearable garment that they have designed that measures forces going through body joints and tissue. This could be a real game changer in helping athletes reach peak performance and workers understanding poor postures and body movements that can cause injury and pain. To have full disclosure here, I have a small, and I mean a very small, investment in the company. Now let's jump right into the discussion and hear what a cutting-edge inventor sees the future looking like. Jonathan, welcome to the program. It's great to have you today.
Thanks, Steve. Excited to be here and humbled to be invited.
Oh, this will be great. Why don't we just start by giving us a little background on, you know, kind of where you grew up and where you went to PT school and just kind of how you got your career started.
Yeah, sure. So I actually grew up back east in the Boston area and went to Boston College, and I was kind of a late bloomer in terms of knowing what I wanted to do. I graduated from college and I was an economics major. That wasn't very physical therapy-esque,
right.
But so then I moved to China and I worked there for a couple of years, and I kept doing sort of endurance sports, right? So played a little bit of college baseball, got cut from that, then started running again, and got into marathons. And while I was in China, I kept doing marathons and triathlons. And when I came back to the States, my girlfriend, now wife, wanted to move to DC so she could work on the Hill and get her master's. And that's where I got into personal training.
Okay.
And it turned out I was okay at that, and kind of moved up the ranks with that and started opening health clubs for Washington sports clubs over in the DC area. And that was a lot of fun, but I felt like I still wanted more. I sort of knew what I was doing. I didn't know why I was doing and why things were doing what they did for clients. Thought I would go to medical school, right? Like everybody thinks that. And did the program at Georgetown, a post-bac program, and took the MCATs and moved to Oregon actually after that for residency. And on my way to OHSU, interviews for med school, I just stopped and I said, wait a second, I want to work with healthy people, not sick people.
Uh-huh.
And that was an expensive lesson to come about, but I'm glad it came about then before actually going into medical school and getting into that whole process. But, someone that you know very well, Kelly Reed, was pretty instrumental in helping me figure out that I wanted to go to PT school.
That's great.
I met her coaching a local running store's group run program. She was the PT supporting the program, and she said to me, she goes, why don't you just come to my clinic and hang out for a little bit? Well, 3 years later, I've done more loads of laundry and folded more towels and clean tables and work with patients than I ever thought as her aide. And And then I didn't start PT school until I was 30, okay. 31.
Yeah. That's great. And so did you go to Pacific then? Is that where you went?
I did go to Pacific. I sort of put all my eggs in one basket and said, this is it. We already had a house here in Portland. So.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. So then you go to Pacific University and graduate that program. And where did you take your first position as a physical therapist?
I took my first position as a PT at a clinic within the Therapeutic Associates network, a clinic called PACE, and was with a fairly prominent PT, Dave McHenry. It was right at that point, the company was under your leadership. And I thought I had the dream job, truthfully. You know, here I am getting to work with the best athletes in the world and associated with Nike. It was awesome. I was learning from the best PTs around.
So you were there for a while, I believe, and then an opportunity came up with Adidas, I believe. So tell us how that happened and what you had to do to make that dream come true.
Well, I just started in our regular practice there at PACE. I started getting a reputation and started to see more and more Adidas employees start to come in and request me as their PT. Turns out that I didn't realize that the EXO staff there was sort of sending people in our direction. And so I reached out to them and, you know, thanked them and then told them, you know, if there's anything I can do to help there. They were totally grateful and said, yeah, we would love, you know, you want to come in and do some workshops, help, you know, even educate our staff, you know? And so I did that on, you know, about a quarterly basis. I'd come in and I'd run a workshop for Adidas employees. And then I'd also do, something for their coaching staff. And, you know, about a year later, I get a note from them saying, hey, you know, we're going to bring a PT on campus, but we'd like it to be you. And, that was, I didn't know what to do. I was, you know, I'm here, I am with this dream job. And now I've got this opportunity to go to, you know, kind of the other side of the river, if you will. Right. If you know, the Nike and Adidas brands in Portland, it's, they don't play well in the sandbox together.
Right. Not fond of each other. That's for sure.
So, you know, wanted to bring TAI along with that journey. We, you know, they just didn't get along well, right? I mean, Nike doesn't like Adidas. Adidas doesn't like Nike. And to, you know, TAI's awesome credit, they were so supportive of me. And they just said, you know, you got to do this. This is too good of an opportunity for the profession, if you will. And same with Dave, who was the clinic director and my boss. And so I made a sort of calculated risk and took a leap and really haven't looked back since. It's been a great transition.
That's great, Jonathan. So now you've left the PACE clinic and now you have a clinic on the Adidas campus. So what kind of patients are you working with there and what kind of things are you doing?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people think that it's this, you know, glorious, really sexy job. But, you know, it's no different than any other community. You know, it's a community of about 2,000 to 3,000 people. You know, the average age is quite young of employees. So they tend to be in that sort of average age is 26. But, you know, I see patients from anywhere from their 50s down to their 20s. And they're a very active population, right? Most of them are all ex-collegiate athletes. Some of them are still performing at actually a really high level, whether they have former Olympians or sort of age group athletes. But it is an interesting switch to be on the inside in that in some regards, I've assumed a bit of a primary care role for the community of Adidas because I'm there and I'm accessible, which has been actually quite a fun transition.
Okay. So these are Adidas employees basically that you're working with. Are you working with any Adidas sponsored athletes as well, or is it just the employee population?
I do from time to time get to work with some Adidas sponsored athletes. Truth be told, I worked with more Adidas athletes when I was at Pace than I do now internally at Adidas. It's just a very different structure. Nike has it dialed when it comes to athlete management and athlete engagement. They provide the resources. There are not only professionals, but the actual hard resources on campus for their athletes to restore and become better. Adidas, you know, whether it's just because it's the North American headquarters or their athlete engagement model is slightly different, it's not the same. And so we don't see many athletes come to campus here in North America.
Okay. So now you're working in this clinic setup that you just described, and then the pandemic hits. So how did that change that? Because now there's not as many people on campus, I would assume, and probably nobody on campus. So how did that change what you were doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. So fortunately, I was able to transition really quickly to telehealth. And that happened within a couple weeks. Turns out the platform I use, which is Jane, that it was already ready to go with telehealth and video capabilities. And so it was fairly turnkey. And so that allowed me to just start scheduling patients remotely within a few weeks. Now, granted, you know, volumes certainly dropped down with nobody being on campus and me seeing people from home. You know, I'd say after a few months, it really got right back to normal in person. You know, I would say we are now, even, you know, 2 years later or a year and a half later, we're about 30% down from what we were previously seeing on campus. But I'm off campus now and people are still coming to see me where I am.
So the clinic that you started on campus, you've now moved into another physical site off campus. Do you see that ever changing back again, or do you think this is the new normal going forward?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I could back up and tell you that I always maintained a separate practice from Adidas as well. So, you know, being involved in pro sports and being around that world, I kind of know how quickly things can change. I never wanted to put all my eggs in one basket with with Adidas. And so I always kept one day a week where I saw, you know, non-Adidas patients and whether they were cash pay, whether they were other payer patients. But I always made sure that I had a day where I saw non-Adidas patients because, you know, what if Adidas went away all of a sudden in a poof? And that just made me feel more comfortable. So I always had a separate space. You know, nowadays with everybody being in the office, I'm like the highlight of their day because they get to leave the house and come see me.
Yeah. Well, that was a good strategic plan. I mean, you're exactly right. I know that, whether they're sports teams and they bring in a new coaching staff and new support personnel, or whether they're companies that change and Adidas, their main headquarters is in Germany. Is that right? So, you know,
correct.
Who knows what can happen in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think the future of what the office environment looks like remains to be seen. That being said, you know, they just built two brand new buildings on campus during the pandemic, including a gorgeous new gym and space for collaborative treatment areas. Where, you know, myself, an acupuncturist, a chiro, massage therapist, we could all be working together in a similar area. So I'm optimistic that we'll get back to there, but I think it'll certainly look different than it has in the past.
And do the programs you're working with Adidas, are they also wellness oriented, or are they just, PT specific, injury, getting people back to normal, or is there a wellness component to what you're doing?
There is a bit of a wellness component in that. So their wellness is managed by Exos, Adidas and Exos have a great partnership, and the Exos team of coaches really handles the wellness aspect, whether teaching classes or doing nutrition. And it's this kind of trifecta between myself, the Exos team, and HR that really, I feel really fortunate to have this connection with these organizations within internally, because they really make it possible for us to have the best product for employees.
And what does it look like going forward? What's your hopes and dreams for that Adidas part of your practice? Are you going to be doing something different in the future, or is it what it is?
You know, I think what I would like to do is I would like to bring on others to experience this model. The model that I'm in is really interesting because I'm internal, right? So they're self-insured company, and I'm a preferred provider for them. You know, fully transparent, Adidas doesn't pay me a dollar, right? I'm still a fee-for-service provider. What I would love to see is our relationship elevate to more of a contract basis, because I think that we can impact their bottom line with the quality of care that we're providing on site. That's sort of what I would see as the future for what we could do with Adidas and other large organizations.
Yeah, that's great. So now you have another project going, Matusi, which is a company that you co-founded. So share with us a little bit about how that started, who you're working with, and kind of what the company is and what you hope to do with it.
Yeah, Motusi, I kind of joke about it, but over the past, you know, 2.5 years, I feel like I've gotten an MBA and an engineering degree. It is a wearable technology company, and essentially what we're doing is embedding a sensor array into a pair of tights and a top so that we can quantify kinetic data on the body anywhere, anytime. So essentially our tagline is bringing the lab to the field. That is Motusi. It's a gamified interface on the mobile app. And, you know, really what I hope for is that this technology and capability helps not just like us as clinicians on a day-to-day basis, but also helps to inform, you know, the future of movement science, right? Or from sports medicine. To really understand what's going on in the real world and beyond the laboratory environment in human movement. So, you know, it's a big, big project. It's really hard to do. It's very expensive. My co-founder is a former Intel Capital executive and has several other startup companies that he's been very successful with. And we've built a team of engineers and UX designers and, you know, clinical PhDs and bioinformaticists that are really putting together a product that I think is going to revolutionize the way that we practice in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. And so my thought goes to, how does a PT working in a clinic come up with that idea and then start down that entrepreneurial, you know, business approach? Was it meeting Mark and getting his input on it, or how do you pull the trigger and get it going, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, I don't think risk has ever, I've never been risk averse. I actually grew up in the back of a flower shop in Massachusetts. My parents still own that flower shop 43 years later.
Wow.
I've seen my parents, I mean, they don't take lots of risks, but like just the nature of that lifestyle is a risk, right? And I've seen them work really, really hard for my brother and I. And I, you know, they don't make a ton of money, right? But they put my brother through Yale. They put me through Boston College. I can't say I went into the profession to be a bleeding heart and not make any money, right? I would be a liar if I said that, right? Okay. And although I love what I do on a daily basis, I never want to stop seeing patients. But I, you know, I may be getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, but I really feel like it's a terrible that PTs on average make the salaries that we do. And I think that we as a profession have to look out for one another and really figure out ways for us to leverage our knowledge and create more value out there to to shift the table somehow in order for us to make a little bit more money for the value that we provide out there in the community. And one of the ways I feel like we can do that is through, you know, PTs tend to be sort of a lot more warm and fuzzy, right? And we don't have a lot of objective data to support what we do every single day, but we know we make a huge difference. And Motusi, in my mind, was an opportunity to provide a tool to our profession, and our profession being the ones leading that technology, you know, integration and innovation, so that we're in charge of it to help justify and validate the things that we do to demonstrate that value, right? We should be doing that, and but it's really hard to do that when you're just struggling in the clinic every single day to, you know, see your 16, 18 patients a day and you're exhausted by the end. How do you have any energy to do these other big projects? And I was in a unique position where, Adidas is a good thing, and I had the ability to take on another project in this way. And I was all in for it. You know, I don't use a lot of technology in the clinic because we haven't really seen much that's very useful out there. And if I had the opportunity to build a tool for us as clinicians that would be useful, then I wanted to be a part of it.
And so how long has it been going on? How long ago did you start the company?
Yeah, we end of this year will be at 2 years, the end of this calendar year. Mark and I were, dreaming it up probably 6 months before we formally started the company. But yeah, as of the end of this 2021 calendar year, it'll be 2 years.
Okay, so let's look at what it would be like. So let's say that you have a patient come in and you think that they're a candidate for this wearable. How would it work?
Yeah, so the way that I would think about it first is that it's an assessment tool. It's an assessment tool in that, instead of me saying, that quality of squat, or maybe they're, I think they're unloading and they're favoring this one side, that we would have objective data to support this, right? So I could see in the clinic, without having to have a $300,000 biomechanics lab, I could put this suit onto a patient and I could ask them to squat, do a bunch of different movements, and I would have that data in front of me to support my claims instead of just the subjective opinion of my clinical experience. And then it would just be a regular monitoring for, every 2-3 weeks. But I see the bigger use case being more that individuals, I think, will start, we already see this shift happening where people are taking more control in their health and their wellness. And this is a tool to also help inform the individual user, but then also help collaborate with that movement professional. So you have data to work off of together, and you create the opportunity, instead of having to always come in the clinic, you have this opportunity for this sort of hybrid model of engagement.
Okay, so you come in and they put this garment on. You evaluate the loads that are going through joints and muscles, And from there, you come up with a treatment program or perhaps a performance training program, and then you reevaluate it periodically to see how it's improving.
Correct. You said that much more eloquently than I did.
No. And how else can it be used? I mean, it's like, well, let me ask you this question before that. So, you know, when I look at it, I think, wow, that's great and exciting. But the first thing I think of is, well, geez, how much does that cost? So how do you make it affordable? And how do you make it so that the everyday patient or person has a chance at utilizing that type of innovation?
Yeah, I mean, I think like every technology, it's a little bit more expensive first, right? But I will say that tech and sensor advances have already helped us out in many ways. You know, we're pretty confident that we can get the cost of this down to less than $500, right? You know, I mean, people are out there wearing $200 sneakers and, you know, $400 worth of athletic gear when they come in the clinic, right? We have a garment that has a heck of a lot more value, and we'll also have good amount of style that, I think that type of, that's not a huge price tag. And I think as technology advances keep happening, you know, prices keep coming lower and lower for the smaller technologies that we need in this suit. And I will say that I don't see this being used by every single patient out there. But I think that there is at least a 30-40% of the population that would really latch onto this and do a good, it would be really beneficial for.
So how do you deal with, let's say a patient that comes in and they put on the garment, would they wear this garment home and would you be doing data analysis over a long period of time, meaning many hours or many days, to help figure out where you're at?
Yeah, I think there's multiple different use cases, right? I think if it's an athlete, it's sort of regular testing. I think PTs are going to want to see, you know, fatigue states of their performance, you know, maybe later stages in a game, later stages in a practice, and then some other really specific sport metrics. If it's someone that has a bit more of a chronic issue, I think you're going to want to see what they do in the real world. And, you know, it sounds silly, but like, we want to know how many times they're bending down in a, you know, and using their lumbar spine and not actually bending from the hips, right? That type of feedback and data is really powerful for individuals to make informed decisions from.
And how do you deal with a situation like that? From your physical therapy perspective, I mean, it seems to me that just be a ton of data that would be gathered. How do you make that data manageable for you to make decisions, as opposed to just having just a boatload of data that you don't, you know, I guess I'm feeling like, wow, that seems like a lot of information.
I 100% agree, right? And our goal, so while we've gamified the feedback, the data, so into an avatar and whatnot, our goal is certainly not to just generate a ton of graphs or a ton of lines of data. The feedback needs to be really intuitive, right? And so that's what we've put a lot of energy towards, developing a motion science team that really understands the clinical use cases of how to use technology in the clinic and what is useful to a clinician, right? I think many clinicians don't use technology or big systems because it's intimidating, right? And it's hard to understand those. Like, we shouldn't need another PhD to understand what's coming off of a system. It yeah. should be so easy that the clinician gets it, but also the patient gets it, right? So when you can show it visually instead of graphically, that's why we've gamified that interface on the mobile app.
So you can just look right on your iPhone or I guess whatever phone you have and see what's going on and from that data explain to the patient maybe some ideas to lessen the load on that particular area.
Correct. Yeah. So when we talk about being able to visualize the invisibles, we're talking about the kinetics, right? It's those things that as a movement professional, you see with your eye and you go, oh, that's not right. That doesn't look good. Because the kinematics, the actual motion can really lie, but you see stuff with your eyes, right? And so that's what we make visible through the app and that avatar, so that it's so much easier to educate that patient and they can see what they're actually feeling inside their body. They can be like, oh, now I understand why there's so much force or pain at my knees, because I'm putting all that force through here, and it's not even more evenly distributed through, say, the ankle and the hip, right?
Okay. So do you see it working functionally as, let's say that I'm a skier, and I go to the mountain, but about, you know, 2 or 3 hours into my ski day, my knee starts hurting. So could you see an application where I would wear that suit under my ski gear and ski all day and then come back and show you the data, and perhaps you could identify what I'm doing that and maybe some ideas on how to lessen that load and get rid of the pain?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we even look at just some of the research on patella force that goes through the patellofemoral joint, an anterior trunk lean of just another 6% significantly reduces that amount of force, right? This is, you know, just one of the things that's come out of our motion science team. And so we are out there scouring all the 30 years of biomechanics research to build into the application these insights, because we can capture that type of information, right? If we know that now all of a sudden, you know, we see an average of your, you know, you're sitting more upright now, you're a little bit more fatigued, or, you know, it's all coming out of your knees and you're not using your hips anymore. We would be able to see that. And kind of a future piece that I see happening is haptic feedback, which is when your phone buzzes, to build that into our suit so that you would get some feedback positionally in sort of either the success or, you know, sort of failure of that movement.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So how is it competition-wise? I mean, we've been hearing about wearable technology for a while and a lot of what-ifs out there and so on. Is there a lot of movement in this area? And if so, what makes a Matusi unique and different than others?
There is certainly more movement recently than there has been in the past couple of years. What I will say, though, is that the majority of the movement is all in sort of single sensors, maybe that, or two sensors that go across a single joint, or it's continued to be motion capture with cameras. And the challenge with all of those other options out there, whether it be a camera, for example, you need a pretty sterile environment, and it needs to be clean, or else you get a ton of noise and you don't get accurate readings. So you kind of still limited to that lab-ish environment. Single sensors or just across a single joint, I don't mean to sound callous, but like, what does that tell me that I don't already know as a clinician, right? Our ability to understand where every limb segment is in space at any given time allows us the ability to understand what the dynamic center of mass is of the body, which is really the key for us to understand what are the moments at every joint in the body and what are the ground reaction forces that are happening. So that's what's super exciting about the difference between sort of Motusi and a lot of the other wearable platforms that are out there. And truth be told, the other full body wearable platforms are cost prohibitive. They're not going to be less than $500. They are triple to quadruple and more.
And when you're starting a concept like this in a company like this, is there that pressure of time? Like, you know, we've got to get going before someone else figures it out, or is it, I'm just wondering from a business perspective, what is your fear or what is your concern about the time element of creating this?
There's always that fear, right, that someone's going to come along out of the woodwork. But we have former Nike people We have former Adidas people. We have former Intel people that have all tried to do this before in those respective organizations. And they are all telling us that we're doing what they could not do in those other organizations. And I mean, for what that's worth, right? That's their judgment. And I don't know if that's true or not, but it gives me a little bit more confidence that we are heading in the right path. We're doing it in the right way. And maybe it's because we're small and, you know, with the Nike or an Intel, right, it has to sell more shoes or it has to sell more chips, right? So, you know, our mission is less about selling more chips and selling more shoes, but it's about really changing the landscape for you know, movement science and what's capable from a clinical perspective. So,
and then putting something like this together, the next thing that comes to mind is exactly that: money, money, money. So how do you raise the money? How do you fund this thing? How do you make sure that you have enough resources to keep this thing in development?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, initially it's, you know, you're begging your mom and your aunt and your, you know, your friends and everything. And we've been fortunate in our early seed rounds to have really great supporters. I will say that as of the last few months, we've had a lot more recognition and we are having really strong strategic supporters come out of the woodwork and put money out on the table for us and support us with multi-year agreements. And so those are exciting sort of, you know, feathers in the cap to say, all right, maybe we are doing the right thing. And, you know, these larger companies are really investing in what we're putting together. Yeah. So that's it's great. Hard.
Yeah, I'm sure it's hard. And I would imagine that you probably have to feel probably doing a lot of pitches yourself. And so that's something you got to squeeze into your week as well.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, I think it's not all that hard. I think maybe I dive a little bit too much in the clinical side of things, but, you know, I don't talk too much about the business of it. I probably steer more towards the passion side of what we're doing, and I let Mark focus on the business side. But I think, you know, everything, yeah, it has to have a business case, but it also has to have like a real purpose and a real meaning and passion behind what we're doing. And so in the same way that I educate patients or I work with patients, I bring that sort of same educational perspective to it and excitement. And, you know, I hope that rubs off pretty well on our, you know, prospective investors and partners.
And how do the physical therapists that you've approached about this, how have they looked at it? Are they, you know, have they embraced it and think it's great? Do they kind of get stuck in their rut and not really know how to utilize it? What's been the reaction to this technology from the physical therapy world?
Yeah, I think, you know, no one loves change, right? But we all know that we got to do something in our profession and not just fight for more and more volume, right? We got to think of ways to differentiate ourselves from other professions and demonstrate our value. But the response from other PTs is really exciting. You know, I mean, and there's certainly doubt, right? I mean, I would be that doubter too if someone came to me and said, you know, oh, I've got this thing that can, you know, this kit, just put on these pair of pants and a shirt and you're going to get, you know, similar information to what you get when you go in the biomechanics lab. I'd be like, whatever, that's a bunch of crap. But when they start to see it and they go, oh my God, this is really possible. They get so excited about what they can actually do with their patients, right? Because this is the type of data that they wish they could have on every single one of their patients that they're working with.
And how much training is involved for me as a PT that wants to adopt this into my practice on understanding the data and you know, calculating that and, you know, knowing how to use it, so to speak, and what I do with the patient going forward as far as a treatment plan or a performance training plan?
Yeah. So our hope is that there's sort of two paths of education, right? And the first is, like you just said, about how does this objective information impact the plan of care or interventions that you're selecting or a performance plan? Two ways. One is, I think that a lot of PTs know what they want to do, but this helps to justify their decisions. And for those who don't, the intuitive feedback of the system will help PTs understand where they're going, right? I sort of use it as not a clinical decision support tool, but more of a critical decision support tool, in that it's not just for the clinician, but it's also for the user, right? And so there's that piece of the education of it. And then there's another sort of path of education that we're, you know, developing for clinic owners and other individual clinicians, is the business use, like how to incorporate this into your business as opposed to just your the clinical practice. And how do you get reimbursed for it? What other use cases are there for you to generate new lines of cash-based revenue, right? Whether those are team screens, whether those are, you know, working with other personal trainers and other movement professionals and coaches to provide this type of assessment services, billing certain codes that are, reimbursable to the similar likes of therapeutic activities based on this functional test and measures thing. So there's a couple different paths of education. And it doesn't take long for a PT to go, oh, I get those things. But it's just not always the way that they're doing it on a day-to-day. It's just, there's a little bit of education, but not a ton.
Yeah, that's really, really impressive. Let's go back to the beginning. So I'm trying to think of, okay, I'm a PT in the clinic and I come up with this idea. How did it, was it your idea first, or did Mark, the Intel guy, come up with the idea, or did you come up with it together? I'm just curious as to how you come up with an idea and then you put it together and get it rolling down the path of becoming a company and hopefully changing the way we do things.
Yeah. Mark had built a very similar product during his days at Intel Capital. And Intel launched it with Major League Baseball, and then they quickly squashed it, like many projects that Intel does, right? Many big companies start things and then just squash them. But Mark, when we started having more coffee and more beer, and he started telling me about these projects, I think those are all very strategic meetings that we had on his part, where he was trying to get my brain going and trying to figure out what are the possibilities of this. And that's really kind of how it happened. I was like, we can do this. If we can do this, then I want to use it for, sports performance testing. I want to use it for the geriatric population. I want to understand fall risk, right? I want to understand, are we doing what we should be doing from a return to sport perspective from knee injuries, right? What would this do to inform job demands analyses for occupational health and safety? What could we understand in the military about what forces people are experiencing in the real world that are not possible to reproduce? And so my mind just started going, kind of bananas on this. And I think that was by design. He was trying to get that out of me and pretty much trying to sell me on joining him on this path to make it a reality.
That's great. And how did Mark find you? How did you two meet?
Oh, funny. Yeah. So he was actually a patient of mine at Pace.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. That's those connections and connections become relationships, and that's how it starts. So that's awesome. So
yeah.
So tell me about what are you thinking? I mean, I know you're in the stage of raising money to keep the company going and do some more innovative things. You're trying to manufacture the product, which we know in the pandemic era can be extremely difficult. So what are your challenges right now, and what do you see in the next couple of years?
Well, supply chain is certainly our biggest challenge right now in manufacturing in the United States. And that's largely because why we've pulled it back into the United States is that we have a few contracts with the military, and that is a sort of a central tenet for them is to have manufacturing in the United States. And so that has been a challenge. It seems weird that I'm not more nervous about this, but I really have confidence and feel good about what we're doing because it feels authentic. It's I wouldn't be able to sell snake oil. I just can't do that. And I think it's really just going to help our profession. And, you know, I want PTs to be the leaders of this adoption so that we are driving it, right? And we are looked at as the experts in movement.
You know, it sounds so exciting, and I'm just trying to get my head around the enormity of it and so on. So what haven't I asked you that you need to tell us that is part of this dream and part of this product going forward?
You know, when we first started talking, I told Mark, I said, you know, I don't feel like we'll be successful unless, or maybe I should say that, like, I'll know we were successful when we can do two things. One is retrospectively look back, you know, maybe we have, you know, over 5 years, we have several thousand, you know, young women athletes that unfortunately, you know, ruptured their ACL, right? But fortunately, we've captured every single one of those that's happened. And now we have some level of new understanding of why or what we might be able to do to impact that. Because it's happened in the real world, right? Maybe it's totally different from what we completely understand now, right? Or maybe it's just slightly different. But if there's any ounce of information that helps us address it, prevent it, and impact it at all, that will be what I feel like we've been successful overall as a company. And the other piece is when we tie this into gaming, pediatric neuromuscular disabilities are tough for obviously the child, but for families, right? And if our product is able to provide a family to be offloaded from having to, you know, schlep to the hospital a couple times a week and the kid having to, you know, yeah, I mean, you can put a lot of animals on the wall and make fuzzy things, but it's still a hospital and it's still a PT and it's not great for the child, right? And if, you know, if we can create a game, you know, a therapist designed gaming where the child's putting on an Elsa dress, you know, that has our kit in it, or, you know, a superhero, you know, a costume that has our sensors in it, and they're playing therapist design games and they feel just like another kid and their sibling wants to play the same game and the family is offloaded a bit there. That's another piece where I think that's where I'll feel like we've been successful.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, Jonathan, usually at this time of the interview, I always ask a common question to my guests. So that common question is, in relation to leadership, what is a pearl of wisdom that you can leave us with today?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When you asked me or invited me to be on this podcast, I really thought hard about it because you've had some big hitters on this podcast. And, you know, I thought to myself, am I really a leader? What am I leading, right? I do think I've taken some risks, and I recognize that. But all the way through, I think, you know, authenticity and being, you know, sort of true to yourself is an important piece. But there's three things that I kind of tell people when they're like, how did you get this Adidas gig? How have you done what you've done? And I just said, well, I think you just need to do your job well, right? you need to give a shit and not suck. And
that makes sense. Makes sense.
Right? I mean, it's very simple. I mean, you can really break all those things down into much more sophisticated topics and whatnot, but I don't know. I don't know if it's an East Coast hustle thing or what, but I just feel like whatever you're doing, have a ton of pride in what you're doing and do it the best that you can. And that's how, you know, you can go to bed at night feeling good about yourself, you know?
Well, that's great advice. And I think don't underestimate yourself on the leadership piece. I mean, to go into these areas of innovation and try new things and get people excited about it and surround yourself with people that help make it work and that type of thing. I mean, that's perfect leadership. I mean, that's what it takes. So just because you're not the CEO and a bunch of people underneath you yet, you know, you're doing a lot of things that I would consider as a classic leadership. So stay strong, keep doing what you're doing, and I think it definitely is leadership at its best.
Well, thanks, Steve. That means a lot coming from you.
So share with us, you know, with our listeners, if they're interested in hearing more about Matusi and what you're doing, how would they find you and what should they look for?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they can simply just go to our website, matusi.com, and sign up there. Sure. Motusi. And, you know, what's the origin of the name? So Motu and C are just Latin for movement. Yes. And, you know, truth be told, all of the .com, the .net, all of those were available. So that's why we went with it.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Jonathan, this has been a real pleasure talking with you today. And I've certainly enjoyed watching you, grow and evolve in your career and just do amazing things. So thanks for coming on the program, and I'm sure this is going to be really interesting to a lot of people and seeing what's possible and the future of movement and physical therapy and going forward. It's really exciting to see.
Well, I appreciate you allowing me up on this platform, and you know, I can't wait to continue to meet more people that are you know, like-minded and want to keep our profession at the highest level possible.
Awesome. All right, Jonathan. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.